It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks to a suggestion, Tina in Oshkosh, we learn about strain on vocal cords and other voice disorders. Teachers, actors, salespeople on calls during the day, these are some examples of occupations with more vocal stress. And you can be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. You can add your views at 800-642-1234. Wendy Fabiziak is a speech-language pathologist in Oshkosh, specializing in voice disorders and vocal cord dysfunction. Wendy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So as it becomes more like winter in Wisconsin, temperatures cool, does vocal cord dysfunction become more common? Is there any seasonal connection?
Oh, good question. Anything that can be potentially irritating to the vocal cords can trigger more issues with it. Very extreme cold, dry air certainly can trigger, as well as the humid, hot air itself. So both season extremes do tend to increase some symptoms with this.
So the Cleveland Clinic says stress is also a common cause of vocal cord dysfunction. What are some other causes?
Well, originally we thought of vocal cord dysfunction as generating as a result of irritation. So a lot of times I was about internal irritation in terms of perhaps post-nasal drainage, reflux that was coming up from the stomach, creating irritation in the throat, and our body is very good at protecting the vital organs. So those vocal cords would start to close, shutting any potential passage into the lungs, which started to then create some of the symptoms of shortness of breath, coughing, throat clearing, etc. So that irritation, but it isn't just internal irritants, things in the air during the Canadian wildfires, certainly that was irritating, fumes, pollens, things that people may be allergic to, all increase the propensity to develop some issues with this.
Can you step back for a moment and give us like a working knowledge or a tour of this part of our anatomy and how the voice box works?
Oh, absolutely. It really helps. And with my patients, it's a huge component of the therapy because when people understand their own anatomy, it helps. The idea of not being able to catch your breath becomes very terrifying. And unfortunately, it feeds the symptoms because a lot of this can also occur as a result of stress, as you mentioned. So the voice box is situated, the larynx, Adam's apple, all the same thing. We all have one right in the middle of the throat. If we look down that voice box, our vocal cords are situated right in the middle of that. They open and close and are literally the doorway down into the lungs, which is underneath those vocal cords. So when the vocal cords are wide open, there is free air exchange up and down from the lungs, out the mouth and nose when we're breathing. What happens during vocal cord dysfunction is there is a slight closure. And that closure can range from pretty significant to very mild. It can come and go quickly. It can stick with you for hours. But that's basically what's happening, subsequently creating symptoms of difficulty drawing in a deep breath of air, feeling that air that I take in doesn't feel fulfilling, like it's not, like it's traveling through too much tension in my throat. It can create coughing, it can create throat clearing, voice issues, all associated with this, occasionally even some swallowing problems.
So what happens if if there's inflammation in the vocal cords? I'm thinking even of laryngitis. What happens then?
Well, and to tell you the truth, now as we're learning more and more about this condition, we know now that this is often set off by something like laryngitis, by an upper respiratory illness, by that kind of thing. And of course, we just went through having a lot of people have COVID, and I am certainly seeing a lot of fallout of that now. Inflammation is not a necessary component of this condition, but certainly when there's a lot of chronic irritation, like nasal drainage, like reflux, it can add another dimension to it. If there is inflammation, that's basically puffing up the vocal cords, swelling them a little bit, which further narrows that airway tract.
Hmm. Can medications or prescriptions you're on, can that cause problems in the voice box?
It can cause drying. There are a lot of medications that can cause drying. Our voice box likes to be nice and moist. It's mucosal tissue. So drying medications can be an issue. The other issue is, in the past, we always just would hand someone an inhaler, frequently riddled with steroids, and say, try this, use this. The problem was steroids, inhalers, albuterols, those types of things open the bronchioles down lower in the lungs. But that's not what this condition is. It's not about asthma. That the inhalers will treat asthma, but this is more up at the level of the throat, of our voice box. And we're finding that actually some of those inhalers, most of them, are actually creating even more irritation and certainly not helping, if anything, perhaps even making things a bit worse.
The Mayo Clinic says that vocal cord dysfunction can be misdiagnosed as asthma. How do you tell the difference between vocal cord dysfunction and asthma?
And that's a huge piece of education for my patients, is recognizing. And it is very common for me to treat people that have both these conditions. It's identifying where the symptoms occur. I talk to people about the breathing apparatus, almost just like an upside down tree. The trunk is our throat. The tree branches come out, get lowered down into our chest and our lungs. If there's more of a pressure sensation, a tightness, low, a stinging, a burning down lower in the chest, that's often more associated with asthma. But these patients with vocal cord dysfunction are more so feeling a tension up higher at the level of the throat, where it's almost like effortful, muscular. There may be some tension or even tenderness, pain in the throat itself. That should not be occurring in asthma.
We're talking about voice disorders with Wendy Fabiziak, speech-language pathologist. You can join in with your questions and your experiences. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Wendy, when you look at a cross-section of your patients, who is most likely to experience vocal cord dysfunction?
Female, 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 about 80% female. However, other than that, what we do see is a predominance of this in middle school, high school girls. I also see it a lot in people that professions involve a lot of talking, like teachers, where they're trying to get out a lot of words in a short amount of time, not really breathing appropriately. I've also seen this case with people that have gone through some significant stressful events. I had a patient that was raped. I'm dealing more with PTSD, some of the soldiers. So certainly high stress issues that come around can cause this in and of itself also.
Why women and girls?
You know, we're questioning it. We're looking at hormones a bit, the research is. However, I do believe there's something about that females tend to seek help more from a medical professional. So the females are coming and going, this just doesn't feel right. Where men tend to wait unless it's really significant. And this is more of a chronic kind of irritation. So I think some men are just dismissive of it.
So a chronic type of irritation, is vocal cord dysfunction something that a person can self-diagnose?
In essence, you know, to get a very specific diagnosis, we have to put a scope, a small laryngoscope, through the nose, down the throat, and observe the vocal cords misbehaving and the symptoms happening. The problem is these symptoms vary very quickly. Like I said, it may persist for hours, but it may only occur for a minute or two. So if we're not looking at the vocal cords at that very moment that it is occurring, it won't actually diagnose it. There was a day where insurance has required that in order to get treatment, but now this is becoming much more just symptom driven. The symptoms are very specific, very specialized to this disorder. So it is something that people almost can. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you find, you know, in the procedure of going, you know, up the nose and back down, I mean, is that done without any sedation? You know,
it is. Okay. There is no sedation. However, they often will spray some lidocaine, which is a numbing agent, into the nose. So it's not necessarily painful, but it does feel awkward, a little gaggy. And when you're already feeling like it's hard for you to catch your breath and you're struggling with perhaps breathing and or coughing, throat clearing, it's not a pleasant experience. So like I said, these days we're not doing it as consistently with the scope.
Wendy Fabiziak is a speech-language pathologist in Oshkosh, helping us to understand vocal problems and different therapy approaches that we'll get into. You can be part of this discussion. Call in with a question. You can share comments along the way. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks to an email request from Tina in Oshkosh, we learn about vocal cord dysfunction and how it's more common than we might think. Speech-language pathologist Wendy Fabiziak fields your questions about causes, treatments, and exercises that can help to restore the voice. You can join the conversation and ask your question. Call 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Wendy, what therapies exist for vocal cord dysfunction? What are options?
Well, it's primarily treated with the assistance of a speech therapist, myself. A big component of the treatment is identifying the symptoms, understanding the symptoms, realizing that although the symptoms can be quite scary, they cannot take your life. Worst case scenario, I've worked with probably 1,000+ people. Less than 5 have actually passed out, but that is the worst case scenario in this condition. Once the body relaxes, then the breathing mechanism works naturally. But getting them into therapy, it's not long haul treatment, usually anywhere from 1 to 5 sessions, but teaching them to not only identify their triggers, I work with them on learning to relax the laryngeal structure, the throat itself, the voice box, letting that relax so that the movement of the air is more free. I teach specific breathing strategies to compensate for what is going on with the vocal cords.
Do you typically need a referral to see a speech language pathologist?
You do. I do need a physician referral. That often comes from the form of ENTs, pulmonologists, allergists, but this condition that we just became aware of in the 80s has finally come into the mainstream, and primary care physicians are also referring to me now, too. In fact, they're very receptive to sending somebody over for therapy. It's a relatively inexpensive treatment that can really help very quickly.
We heard from Juliet in Bayfield called in, and Juliet says their son has breath control issues in speaking and communicating due to trauma as a baby. And Juliet would like to know what exercises or treatment is out there.
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. And it depends on how old he is. Although when it comes to this, I have worked with anywhere from 4 to 94, but really teaching him how to better manage the diaphragm and the appropriate breathing strategies. The problem is we have a lot of emphasis right now on breathing. It's very prominent in the schools with our children, but to get the kids using breathing that is actually an effective breathing technique that can actually help calm the system and allow the airflow to coordinate more effectively with the voicing is an entirely different matter. Being able to truly use the diaphragm correctly, it really doesn't take a lot of work, but it takes educating, practicing, and showing someone truly how that works rather than the idea of just taking a big, deep breath, because that in no way is using the diaphragm.
Let's bring on a call. Nancy is with us in Milwaukee. Nancy, what is your question?
I'm a 91-year-old person. I've had a 45-year history of Barrett's throat, and as of late, my voice has very much changed, as you can tell. What does this person know about Barrett's throat, please?
Nancy, thank you. Wendy?
Well, Barrett's esophagus or Barrett's throat has to do with irritation of reflux in the esophagus. Oftentimes, if the reflux is making it all the way up into the esophagus, it can go even further up into the throat. Once that reflux hits the throat, it is ripe to then fall down and hit the vocal cords. That reflux, very caustic, acidic, is very damaging to the voice box and to the vocal cords. It also can be causative in both vocal cord dysfunction and voice problems, having difficulties in using the voice. Barrett's esophagus absolutely needs to be treated with medication to get that under control.
Nancy, thank you for the call. Christina in Glenwood now. Christina, hi.
Hi there. Thank you. I'm curious to know if the heat from our morning coffee or tea affects the vocal cords. And also, if it does, is there a certain temperature that we should not exceed?
Wendy.
Wow. That's a great question. So here's the reality of it. When we're drinking something like coffee or tea, there literally are two tubes in the back of our throat. The back tube goes all the way down to the stomach. That is your esophagus. That is where your coffee or tea are going to go, down that back tube. There is a tube right in front of that, the trachea. The trachea is where our voice box or our larynx is located. Liquids like coffee and tea do not go into that voice box. That would be aspiration, because then it would be going down into our lungs. That is definitely not good. So I've had singers that are really hyper-focused on what they're swallowing. The reality of it is that it isn't touching the vocal cords. But in general, heat is good for muscle relaxation. Stress causes tension, particularly to muscles about the throat and the larynx. So although drinking hot beverages don't necessarily do a whole lot, what I've found to be very effective with my patients is using like a hot pad, a rice bag that you can heat up, and putting that literally around some of the muscles around the front of the throat to penetrate more effectively into the voice box.
Talking about voice disorders with Wendy Fabiziak, speech-language pathologist, fielding your questions at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Okay, Wendy, do you recommend throat lozenges to help treat symptoms of vocal tiredness? What do you say about throat lozenges?
Well, here's what I have to say. Absolutely, helping with secretions is good. However, most throat lozenges are riddled with menthol, mints, all of which are very drying and can also frequently stir up that reflux, that acid in the stomach, pretty significantly. So they are not particularly recommended. Rather, I suggest something like a sugar-free, fruit breeze, that type of thing. Because again, having something to suck on can be effective. Most effective is simply having some water. I have some right here with me. When this is happening to people, swallowing can really be just an effective little strategy just to gain some control. So swallowing water is the best thing we can do for ourselves.
Any insights on honey? Does honey help at all?
You know, honey has wonderful healing properties, but again, that honey is going down the back in the esophagus, and it is not actually getting into the voice box or the larynx. So I have no problems with honey. I think it's great, just not super effective in terms of actually, quote, coating the vocal cords, which I hear people say sometimes it does not do that.
Psychologically, we feel like it's
exactly. It feels good.
Some yoga styles and mental health therapies use breathing exercises as part of their practice. Could these breathing exercises help with vocal cord dysfunction?
Absolutely, if done correctly. And that's, it's always curious to me when people say, well, I do yoga a lot and they encourage diaphragm breathing. And I'll say, great, show me your diaphragm breathing. And most of the time, people's assumption of that is simply taking a deep breath in. But it also involves literally using this large muscle right under our rib cage, the diaphragm, effectively. There should be no movement of the chest, shoulders, accessory muscles up in that chest that act to only clench and tighten the muscles of the voice box. So the diaphragm, on the other hand, has a nerve that literally runs from it, wraps around and goes up to that voice box. When fully effectively engaging the diaphragm, it communicates to the voice box and says, relax, open, we're breathing now.
Do patients ever need surgery to treat vocal cord dysfunction?
Not typically, no. This is not something that we can modify the vocal folds for. We only do that in cases of like paralysis of a vocal cord. So no, this is something that's treated more behaviorally. And again, recognizing what this is, that it feels like I can't catch a breath, often induces a bit of panicking, which makes the whole thing worse. But when they understand fully what it is, it really helps kind of backpedal, I should say, and get into the breathing modality that they're supposed to be using.
In our last 15 seconds or so, you said water is next to you. What other thing would really help us protect our vocal cords?
Avoiding loud screaming in the back of our throat that, go, you know, at Packer games or what have you. the way we use our voice, we can be loud, but we can't be loud and really put a lot of emphasis on that throat itself. Too much caffeine is not great for the voice. Too much alcohol is not great for the voice because, again, those things tend to lead to reflux, which, again, can be quite damaging. Overusing, abusing the voice. Again, if you know how to do it, it's okay.
Wendy, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Wendy Fabiziak, speech-language pathologist. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.